Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Huey Calloway series. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Drew Kopas, Christopher Graybill, Joe Brack, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Catherine Aselford, Yasmin Toison, Michael John Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Tim Carlin, Scott McCormick, Danny Gavigan, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Andy Clements, James Konacek, Paul Fidalgo, Jonathan Watkins, Nanette Savard, Sherry Simpson, and Mort Shelby. Huey Calloway, number one, The Smiling Country. Huey Calloway didn't know how old he was without stopping to figure, and that distracted his attention from matters of real importance. In his opinion, anyone who wasted time worrying about his age had more leisure than was good for him. He had not acknowledged a birthday since he turned 30 a dozen years or so ago. Or was it 15? In horse years, Biscuit was older than his rider, but the brown gelding was equally indifferent to the passage of time. Any minor concessions to his age were offset by steadiness and a light-reined response to any task Huey called him to perform. He could outguess a cow in 9 of 10 confrontations and outrun her the other time. Huey couldn't say nearly so much about the green broke pony on which Skip Harkness picked his way along the rocky mountainside above Olympia Creek. Since Huey and the freckle-faced kid left the corrals and chuckwagon camp down on the Yucca Flat, the colt had stepped high and kept its ears working nervously while it watched for a booger. Any booger would do. It had already pitched twice, once spooking at a jackrabbit skittering through the underbrush, then taking fright at the cry of a disturbed hawk that sought to scare the horseman away from its nest high in a tree. The two outbursts offered little challenge, for Skip was young and wiry and laughed at every jump. Huey respected anyone efficient at his trade, but he worried about this button's long-range prospect. A kid from a blackland farm back in East Texas, Skip had cowboyed a couple of years and learned just enough to be dangerous to himself and everybody around him. Small triumphs tempted him to kick trouble in the ribs when it could just as well have been left asleep. Instead of pulling up on the hackamore rein to stop the pony from pitching on treacherous sloping ground, Skip had encouraged it to buck harder by spurring high in its shoulders and back in the flank. The colt pitched until its sorrel hide glistened with sweat. Huey couldn't bring himself to criticize, for he used to show off too, not all that long ago. He still gloried in a challenge, but he saw no future in suicide.
I've seen broncs that'd throw you so high the hawks would have to look up to see you.
Ain't been a bronc throwed me since I was 16.
Huey guessed Skip to be 18, no more than 19 at the outside, with his heart in the right place, but his head on backward.
Biscuit would have busted you good when he was a colt. You flattened me several times.
Was that before or after the war between the states?
The kid was thumbing Huey in the ribs about his age and Biscuit's. This was 1910.
Was nothing I could do then that I can't still do. I can ride more miles, find more cows, and rope more calves.
He quit talking, for Skip's satisfied grin said he'd thrown out the bait and Huey had swallowed it, hook and all. Huey never understood why some buttons barely weaned from mother's milk took such pleasure in baiting their betters. His nephews would never do such a thing, not Cotton or Tommy. They showed respect, even when he knew they disagreed with him. He wished he had one of them here now, instead of this reckless kid with more brass than good sense. They could teach Skip something about manners.
I could almost feel sorry for the kid.
Skip came along too late to see Texas before the grasping hand of civilization reached out and spoiled it. Huey had ridden across more country than Skip was likely ever to see. He had driven cattle to the Kansas Railroad and had broken broncs from the Rio Grande to the Canadian line. He'd shipped out to Cuba under Teddy Roosevelt, He'd traveled horseback across much of the West before it was parceled out by barbed wire fences and ribboned with roads for the automobile. Skip would never have that opportunity or even realize what he'd missed. Huey Calloway had done it all, yet here he was, still in the prime of life. Huey would admit, when he looked into a mirror, that his hair and his whiskers showed about as much gray as brown, but that was a sign of maturity and reliability. If his joints sometimes ached when he threw the blankets aside of a morning, most of the pain faded once he got the muscles working and the blood flowing freely. He was sure he was a better hand now than he had ever been. He would never ask, but he was probably drawing down $5 or $10 a month more than Skip or the other weanlings on this outfit. At least he should be. He could ride anything they could and rope rings around them. If a genie were to pop out of a whiskey bottle and offer him 3 wishes, Huey would give 1 or 2 of them back. There wasn't much he would change, beyond tearing down the fences and ditching all the automobiles. Anybody who couldn't get where he was going on horseback or in a wagon was in too much of a hurry.
You want to ride my bronc a little while, just to keep your hand in?
There's no fight left in him now. You've already spurted out of him.
A real hand didn't let some button sweat the rough edges from a bronc and then turn it over to him as if he were too old to do it himself. Huey could still do it himself anytime he wanted to. And he often wanted to, for he still enjoyed a good contest between man and horse. The J-Bar crew was rounding up 2-year-old steers to ship to Kansas for summering on Flint Hills grass, but the wagon boss sent Huey and Skip to look for a bunch-quitting bull that fled from yesterday's drive. It evaded 3 years' worth of roundups, the branding iron and knife, and left a long scar across the chest of one unlucky cow pony that didn't move out of its way. The bull had a reputation for being easy to find, but hard to catch. The few pursuers it didn't outrun, it outfought, so most local cowboys accorded it an averted gaze. It ranged in one of the narrow, brushy canyons that time and rainfall carved through the Davis Mountains. Grazing mostly in the dark of the night, it drank from the small and hidden tinajas, depressions that eons of runoff water scoured from flat rock. The solitary maverick responded to its mother's wily longhorn blood, which overpowered the gentler influence of its Hereford sire. Old man Morgan Jenkins was trying to breed the longhorn blood out of his herd, and this bull was putting its outlaw stamp on too many calves to suit him. Such brush-popping fugitives furnished entertainment to cowboys who loved the chase, like Huey and Skip, but they were a financial albatross to ranchers and then bankers. Huey was bothered a little when Skip was the first to spot their quarry. He knew his own eyes were still sharp enough. He figured Skip just happened to be looking in the right direction at the right time. Huey stepped to the ground and tightened Biscuit's cinch so the bull's strength and weight wouldn't pull the saddle down on one side. Skip took no such precaution, and Huey was not given to offering advice. If the kid was half as smart as he thought he was, he shouldn't have to be told. Skip had a way of turning routine into a contest.
Reckon that old horse of yours can catch him?
Biscuit'll kick gravel in your eyes.
Skip didn't give him the chance. Skip spurred the bronc and took the lead. Huey was tempted to overtake and pass him just to demonstrate that he could, but he decided the trail the bull followed in its hasty retreat was too narrow and treacherous to accommodate 2 fools. 1 was enough.
Let's go, Biscuit.
Huey took his time, loosing the horn string that held his rope. His sun-browned hands were leather tough, scarred by rope burns and mesquite thorns, the knuckles large except for 1 knocked down 2 years ago in an encounter much like this one. The fugitive bull outran Skip into the heavy brush thicket. Skip followed him partway, then stopped in confusion as Huey caught up.
Can't see him anyplace. Looks like he sprouted wings and flew.
Outsmarted you is what he did.
Huey listened intently for the sound of popping branches, but heard none.
He's laid down in some thick brush where you can't see him. Let's go root him out.
He motioned for Skip to take the left side of the draw. Huey and Biscuit moved up the right, weaving around the mesquite and catclaw. Though he was watching closely, the bull almost took him unawares. A black apparition exploded out of a tangle of mesquite, head down and sharp horns coming straight at Biscuit. The horse whirled so quickly that Huey had to grab the saddle horn to keep his seat. The bull made a thrust at Biscuit's haunches as it passed, but the horse was an old hand at avoiding such calamities.
I got him!
Skip spurred by while Huey was trying to collect his wits and get his breath back. Skip's bronc crow-hopped as Skip shook out the coils. Its only experience with a rope had been on the receiving end, frightening and painful. Dread burned in Huey as he saw that Skip had the near end of the rope secured to his saddle horn instead of taking a couple of dallies that he could turn loose in a hurry. There were many places more pleasant to be than sitting on a 900-pound bronc tied to an ill-tempered bull that weighed 1,600 pounds and was looking for something to kill.
Boy, you're fixing to learn not to suck eggs. Come on, Biscuit.
The chase was fast and rough, the bull shattering brush, its cloven hooves scattering small rocks in their wake. It probably would have gotten away had it not lost its footing on a bare slanting slab of rock and slid on its belly. The animal rose quickly, but its speed was hindered by a limp. Foamy saliva streamed from the bull's mouth. When it became weary enough and provoked enough, it would turn to fight. Then it could be roped, though retrieving that rope might cost bull, horses, and men some blood, hide, and hair. Huey had once seen a tiger in a circus. The sound welling from deep in the longhorn's throat reminded him of the great cat's roar. The bull wheeled and lowered its head.
You stay back out of the way. I can handle him.
Yeah, like Richmond handled Grant.
Skip's rope hissed like a snake as he sailed his loop over the horns. The bronc tried to buck just as the bull hit the end of the line. The impact jerked both animals off their feet. Skip hit the ground on his back. The bronc regained its feet and ran in panic. As the rope again stretched taut, it snapped at the saddle horn. The horse galloped away, holding its head high and wringing its tail. The loop was still around the bull's horns, the frazzled end of the rope lying on the ground. Skip jumped to his feet, instinctively grabbed it, then dropped it as the bull lowered its head again and charged. The boy sprinted toward a catclaw bush not much taller than he was.
Huey! Do something!
It was high time this scatterbrained kid learned that the way of the braggart was strewn with shame and regret.
You told me to stay out of the way!
Yowie!
The bull stepped on the trailing rope and broke its stride long enough for Skip to reach the other side of the catclaw. He looked desperately for his bronc, but it was still running. It might as well be 10 miles away for all the good it could do him. The bull made a run around the bush after the boy. Skip managed to stay 2 paces ahead, circling.
Why don't you climb the tree?
The catclaw was well named, for its branches were armed with needle-pointed thorns shaped like claws. Perhaps a cat might climb that bush, but Skip never could, not even with a sharp-horned bull providing incentive. The bull stopped and began to paw dirt back over its shoulder, a sign it had barely begun to fight. Skip crouched on the opposite side of the tree, ready to run to the left or the right, as circumstances might require.
You just gonna sit there and laugh?
Huey leaned on his saddle horn.
Been a long time since I saw a circus. You might be able to run faster if you took your boots off.
The bull faded to the left, then the right. Skip kept the bush between them. Stymied, the animal stopped and pawed dirt again.
I wish the boys at the wagon could watch you handle this bull. I got half a mind to go back and get him.
Sweat cut trails through the dust on Skip's flushed young face. It was hard to see which was strongest, anger or fear.
Time you get back there wouldn't be nothing left to see. Just a puddle of blood and a little bit of hair.
Huey decided the lesson had gone on long enough.
Let's go, Biscuit.
He eased Biscuit toward the bull, which shifted its attention from Skip and charged at the horse. Huey kept Biscuit far enough ahead to avoid the horns. At a safe distance from Skip, he cut around and brought Biscuit up behind the bull. His loop sailed down around the horns. He left enough slack that the bull stepped into the loop with his right foot. Huey quickly drew the rope tight, pulling the foot up against the head. The animal faltered, lost its balance, and fell heavily, raising a puff of dust. It lay struggling, unable to rise with its leg immobilized against its muzzle.
Took you long enough.
Perhaps his voice cracked from outrage, perhaps from a remnant of fright, most likely from both. The red in his face exaggerated the freckles.
Oh, wanted him to wear himself down a little.
Huey untied a short length of rawhide rope coiled on the back of his saddle and pitched it to Skip.
There, tie him.
Skip struggled to bring the other three legs together, accidentally backing into the catclaw bush in his efforts to stay clear of the threshing head and dangerous horns. The clutching thorns ripped the back of his shirt. Huey dismounted and untied a short dehorning saw he brought for good purpose.
First thing we better do is tip his horns so he won't gore any more horses.
Skip knelt on the bull's head to keep the animal still while Huey sawed off the outer several inches of horn. Skip gripped the muzzle and raised the head to let Huey work on the other side. The bull snorted mucus in Skip's face. Huey ran a finger over the rough edge after the sharp tip was gone.
Well, he could still bust your ribs with that, but he won't poke a hole in you that the Lord never intended.
Skip's emotions began to subside.
I thought you were fixing to let him put a new hole in my butt.
Just wanted him to educate you a little. I'll bet you're a lot smarter than you were 20 minutes ago.
If Skip felt any appreciation, he kept it well concealed.
I'll let you and that bull sulk together while I go catch your horse.
Skip's bronc gave up running after catching a forefoot in the looped hackamore rein. At first, it resisted Huey's efforts to free it from entanglement.
Easy here, boy.
It stepped on Huey's toes before it calmed down.
Oh, damn. Bronx and farm-raised buttons, you deserve one another. Come on, you sorry piece of horse flesh. Let's get you back to Skip.
Skip's face had lost its angry color by the time Huey led the bronc back.
Well, at least old man Jenkins ought to be tickled. We got him his bull.
Huey watched the animal fight against the restraint of the rawhide and bound its feet.
Mr. Jenkins didn't send us out here not to get him.
A ranch owner paid little attention when cowboys did the work he expected of them. He paid close attention when they didn't. That you could and would do the job was taken for granted when you went on the payroll. Excuses were worth only about a nickel a carload, and good reasons about a dime. Huey rarely offered either.
Now that we caught him, what are they fixing to do with him?
Take away his bullhood and send him to Kansas with the steers. He's a throwback to the old days.
Like you?
Putting the spurs to him again. He learns awful slow. Them old longhorns had a lot of good qualities.
They were mostly leg and horn, and the meat was so tough you couldn't cut it with a cleaver.
Well, nature bred them to survive in a tough country. They could grub out a living where nothing else but a horned toad could stay. And you couldn't hardly kill one with an axe.
Looks to me like you're kin to them a little. All you old cow punchers are.
Well, maybe that's why I hate to see the last longhorns go. It's like burying old friends.
Skip studied the helpless form lying on the ground, straining against the rawhide that bound its feet.
If that's the way you feel about it, we could turn him loose and tell the wagon boss we never did find him.
Huey suddenly appreciated the kid a little better.
Well, I hate to tell a lie.
Skip pondered the ramifications, then knelt to untie the knot in the peel.
Better hit the saddle. He's liable to be on the prod when he gets up.
The bull realized its feet were no longer secure. The animal kicked free of the loosened rawhide and rose shakily, hind end first. It pawed dirt. Then it turned and trotted off, tossing its head.
Well, looks like he's getting away.
Huey followed the fugitive, but didn't let his horse out of a walk so that the bull quickly outdistanced him.
Well, Biscuit's tired. We'll never overtake that outlaw like this.
He turned back to pick up the fallen rawhide.
No need in telling a lie exactly. We'll just say we had him, but he got loose. Yeah, the horses were too give out to catch him again.
Skip grinned.
You ought to never deceive the man you work for. Except when you need to.
They watched the bull disappear into a thicket 300 yards away.
There'll be at least one more calf crop carrying that longhorn blood.
It'll take real hands to run them down.
Wild cattle and wild horses are the making of a good cowboy. You don't learn much handling gentle milk stock.
I just wish we could have thrown him into a bunch and seen him challenge some of them other bulls. Ain't nothing I'd rather watch than two big stout bulls fighting one another.
You got a streak of mean in you.
Huey and Skip turned away, heading back toward the chuck wagon camp. His scare passed, and anger drained. Skip reverted to his more typical high spirits.
Gave us some fun for a while, didn't he?
Me and you would call it fun. Some people call it work.
My old daddy throwed a fit when I left home for a riding job. Said I'd never amount to a damn, taking up the saddle instead of the plow. but I wouldn't want to be anything except a cowboy.
My brother Walter got him a homestead and took up farming, but them lace-up shoes never fit my feet.
The only thing is, there's always a boss like Old Man Jenkins or Bige Saunders watching what you do.
Well, they don't own you. You're free to saddle up and go anytime you want to. It's easier to take a few orders when you know you've got an out.
Ever been tempted to do something besides cowboy?
Not much. You gotta make choices. You choose one thing, you give up another. You can't have it all.
The cowboy occupation offered many pleasures. Though there were days when Huey wondered if they were worth the bruises, lacerations, and general soreness that often supplemented his meager wages. He believed being a cowboy was a privilege reserved to a chosen few. He didn't know how the Lord came to pick him, for his willful nature caused him to stray from the gospel path now and again. But he was not one to question his Maker's judgment. He was grateful to be among the chosen.
I'll bet there's not a better place to raise cattle than right here. Why, just the other day,
Skip set his jaw working, making profound observations based on the accumulated wisdom of his 18 or 19 years, and trying to prod Huey out of silence. But Huey barely heard. In his mind, he was at home in Upton County with Walter and Eve and their two boys. And he was remembering a teacher whose name conjured up images of wildflower fields. They called her Spring. The chuck wagon and its accompanying hoodlum wagon were camped beside an old set of rugged corrals, constructed of heavy tree branches stacked between double posts and tied in place with rawhide. The corrals were a remnant of the 1880s, as Huey knew himself to be when he bothered to give the matter any thought. Approaching camp, he saw horses circling in a run, raising a cloud of dust inside the largest pen. Several cowboys, a mix of Mexican and Anglo, stood outside the rough fence, watching as Aparicio Rodriguez swung a rawhide riata and dropped its loop around a long-maned neck. The bite of leather made the caught horse pitch and squeal in protest. Aparicio began slowly working his way up the rope. Soon the bronc quieted down, its ears pointed toward the wiry vaquero. Huey would acknowledge that Aparicio was the best hand on the ranch, except for himself. He smiled much, but talked little, except to horses.
Looks like they brought in that new set of broncs.
Cow work in this rough mountain country was challenging enough just on its own account. The challenge was compounded by having to do it while breaking a set of raw ponies that knew nothing except bite, kick, and pitch. But that was what the ranch paid him $30 a month for. Old Man Jenkins was reputed to be worth $1 million. Huey was taking it away from him at the rate of $1 a day. $1 million days, $1 million.
It's a wonder the old man don't dock us for the entertainment we get out of riding them broncs.
I saw how much entertainment you were getting running around that bush ahead of them horns.
Skip's face became troubled.
You don't have to tell the boys about it, do you? They'll hoorah me for a month.
Cowboys could be merciless to a braggart. They would do whatever it took to bring him down, then laugh at him until he ate crow or quit the outfit.
You just promise me I won't have to listen to any more chin music about what all you can do.
You saying I'm boastful?
If brag was whiskey, you could open a saloon.
Skip took it in fair grace.
I'll try to remember.
Huey recognized Old Man Jenkins sitting on a tarp-covered bedroll near the chuck wagon. Morgan Jenkins was a rancher of the 1880s school, as much a relic now as the Longhorn. More than 6 feet tall, he had probably weighed 200 pounds of pure muscle and bone in his prime. Now, well into his 70s, he weighed a bit more, and his shoulders were bent a little. But in moments of stress, Huey had seen him straighten his back and become once again the formidable figure he had been. It was said of him that once he had single-handedly trailed and confronted 4 horse thieves, shooting one and escorting the other 3 to jail. In contrast to his physical size, he was given to economy in his gestures as well as his expenditures. Where others might holler and wave both arms, Jenkins beckoned with the index finger of an arthritis-knotted hand. Huey sensed that the come-along was meant for him.
Think you can unsaddle that bronc by yourself?
The youngster already seemed to have forgotten Huey's cautionary words about boastfulness.
I could do it with one hand tied behind my back.
I'd have let that bull chase him a little longer.
He tied Biscuit to a corral post, turned and walked toward the wagon so Jenkins wouldn't have to tire himself out crooking that finger again. He stopped at Bias Viegas's chuck box and dug a tin cup out of a drawer, filling it from a coffee pot suspended over a pit of glowing coals. Bias raked the coals with a pot hook.
Don't burn yourself, Huey. She's plenty hot.
Fine. I'd sooner drink dishwater than cold coffee.
Bias had been a vaquero much of his life, but one bronc too many left him with a shattered knee and a crooked leg that would never straighten again. He had turned to that refuge of many a crippled cowboy, cooking at a wagon. Jenkins didn't get up from his seat on the bedroll or waste a lot of breath in his greeting.
Huey?
Mr. Jenkins?
The mister was more in deference to age than to the old man's money. Huey stood in awe of no one's bankroll. In fact, he felt sympathy for Jenkins because the rancher's age and infirmities prevented him from making a hand on horseback anymore. In Huey's eyes, nothing was sadder looking than an old cowboy too stove up to ride. Jenkins gestured for Huey to sit on a nearby bedroll. Huey waited for him to initiate the conversation. The old man did not.
You bring them broncs with you?
He knew better, but he could see Jenkins's open touring car parked a respectful distance from the wagon. But the idle question broke the silence. The driver had the hood up, messing around with something on the engine. Huey had no idea what. He had never had any luck with automobiles. To him, they were the ruination of the country. For a long time, he hoped they were a passing fancy and everyone would get back to the horse as God intended. Now it appeared they would bankrupt the nation first. Then maybe the fad would die the death it deserved. As for that driver, in his duster and goggles, he seemed as out of place in a cow camp as a monkey in church. The man seemed to have an exalted opinion of himself because he knew how to drive a car, but he probably couldn't drive a Jersey cow down a steep-fenced lane. Huey had to feel a little sorry for him.
Them broncs ain't none of your concern. I got a proposition for you.
The rancher had red-rimmed eyes that indicated he liked whiskey more than he should. It probably gave him comfort from his arthritis and other miseries that went with having celebrated so many birthdays. Huey'd heard he could put away a prodigious amount under the right provocation, though he couldn't remember that Jenkins had ever offered him a drink. Jenkins made his start in the freewheeling, maverick-catching times after the Civil War, when an ambitious young man with a fast horse and a quick loop could build toward a fortune by burning his own brand on unclaimed cattle. The period ran relatively short, for those who made theirs first declared further mavericking illegal, kicking down the ladder by which they had climbed, so Johnny-come-latelys couldn't follow. Huey arrived too late to take advantage of the opportunity, though accumulation of worldly goods had never been of much concern to him anyway. Property he couldn't tie to his saddle and carry with him to the next job was a burden, not an asset.
Huey, I just bought the Circle W outfit. 100 sections down yonder under the rimrock.
Huey was not surprised, for Jenkins was never comfortable knowing he didn't own everything within a day's trip from his headquarters. Since he had acquired that car, the miles he could travel in a day had stretched to ride smart.
I want you to run it for me.
Me? Run an outfit? I've never done nothing like that.
It's time you did. Look at you, 6 years older than God and still working for cowboy wages. It's time you taken a grip on yourself and tried to mount to something.
I ain't that old, and I've always made you a hand.
True enough, but I can hire more young hands than I need. All I have to do is honk that horn in Alpine, and a dozen come running down the street dragging a saddle and a bedroll. But somebody who's had experience enough to run an outfit, that's a horse of a different complexion.
Well, it's a lot of responsibility. I never liked being responsible for anything or anybody except myself.
I never could understand a man that didn't want to better his lot in life.
I'm satisfied with myself the way I am. Ain't much I'd want to change.
Nature's changing you whether you like it or not. Them creases in your face keep getting deeper. And your get-along doesn't get along like it used to.
I can still move fast enough to get out of the way.
From all them years of work, have you saved up any money?
$100, maybe. I've had $10,000 worth of fun.
$100? That ain't even enough to bury you in any style.
Well, I wasn't figuring on that happening for a long time yet.
Jenkins's frown furrowed his face like a prune.
Ain't often I give a man a chance to go from $40 a month to $75.
You're only paying me $30.
$65, then. All the more reason you ought to consider the opportunity.
Huey never felt comfortable giving orders, so he'd given very few in his life. He'd always liked best just being one of the boys, doing whatever the job called for with easy competence and without pressure. If the work became tiresome or the boss got under his skin, he would draw his time, saddle up, and ride away without regrets. For a good hand, there was always another job down the road. That was what he would do now if Jenkins tried to twist his arm too much. He'd already worked 2 years for the J-Bar, longer than he was used to spending in one place. Jenkins knew cowboys, for he was still one at heart. He knew when to stop pushing.
I won't try to make you do something that's against your religion. I'll just have to find me somebody that's got ambition. I'd do better with a family man anyway. You ain't never found a woman that gave you a marrying urge?
I did once.
What happened?
We both smartened up before it was too late and I left.
You ever wonder if you did the right thing?
Doesn't everybody?
It looks like he's finished monkeying around with that engine. Wish sometimes I still used a horse and buggy. Didn't need to hire no $50 driver for that.
$50? Huey was just drawing 30, and he was a top hand. But he wouldn't trade places, not for $100.
I wouldn't swap one bronc in that pen yonder for a dozen of them stink wagons.
Them broncs are for the young hands to break. I don't want you riding any of them.
I already broke 25 or 30 broncs for you, and I ain't ruined one yet.
I ain't worried about you ruining them. I'm afraid one of them is liable to ruin you. I know your age, Huey, even if you don't. I don't want you on my conscience.
Jenkins dropped his coffee cup in Bias's wash tub and walked toward his car.
You got that contraption fixed?
The driver wiped his greasy hands on a cloth.
She'll run like a young filly on a spring day, Mr. Jenkins.
I bet that driver wouldn't know a young filly from an old stud. And he gets $50 a month.
You stay off them green ponies, Huey.
Huey didn't respond, for he didn't want to make a promise he wouldn't keep. He watched the automobile kick up a trail of dust across the pasture until he was satisfied that Jenkins wouldn't think of something he'd forgotten and come back. Huey walked to Biscuit and untied the rope from his saddle.
Skip, let's take a look at them broncs.
B.S. Villegas took the chuck wagon ahead to the railroad pens while Huey and the other hands followed with the herd. Huey rode point, ahead of the dominant steers that had taken it upon themselves to move into the lead. Afar, Huey could see the smoking locomotive.
Well, Biscuit, how'd you think you're gonna like that big old iron horse?
Biscuit was a ranch horse, not used to the commotion that went with being in a big town like Alpine. Huey had been riding a couple of the new broncs, but he thought it advisable to use Biscuit for the last stage of the drive, because old man Jenkins would almost certainly be waiting at the pens. Huey didn't want to risk raising the rancher's blood pressure. That could be dangerous for a man of his age. He noticed a truck bumping its dusty way toward the herd, following the ruts of a rough wagon road that led from town. The horn spooked Biscuit. Skip Harkness's bronc began to pitch. One stirrup flopped free, and the surprised kid saved himself only by grabbing the saddle horn. As the truck pulled to a stop, Huey reined toward it, rehearsing the lecture in his mind until he saw that the man behind the steering wheel was a stranger. A passenger stepped out on the right-hand side. Huey blinked in surprise, for he recognized the tall, thin figure of his brother, wearing denim overalls, a farmer's brogan shoes, and a floppy felt hat. It offered only limited protection to a face used hard by the elements.
Walter!
Biscuit sidestepped, wary of the clanking motor, until the driver cut it off. When the noise stopped, the horse moved closer, but remained like a coiled spring, ready to jump away at the least provocation. Walter turned to offer a big, rough hand to the woman who had been sitting in the middle. She stepped to the ground. Huey had been about to dismount. but he decided to remain in the saddle until he determined which direction the wind blew. With his sister-in-law, Eve Calloway, he could never be sure whether it would be a warm, pleasant one from the south or a cold one from the north. Their last parting had been amicable, but he remembered others that were frosty as a February morning. Walter walked slowly toward Huey, careful lest he caused the nervous Biscuit further fright.
Big brother, when are you going to give up trying to be 20 years old? You need to quit riding these skittish broncs.
When I'm 106.
You'll never get that old. Some fool horse will kill you first.
Many good ones tried. But anyway, it's been years since Biscuit was a bronc.
He tipped his hat to Eve.
Huey?
At least she didn't seem angry. Huey decided to step down from the saddle.
You're looking good, Eve.
She wasn't, really. She had always tended to be on the skinny side, but her long, plain gray cotton dress hung loose as if she hadn't been eating lately. She was moving along toward 40 and showed every year of it. The lines in her face indicated deep worry as she stepped close to give Huey a perfunctory peck on the cheek. He held his hands up awkwardly, never knowing for sure if he should hug her or not. He decided against it.
Huey, where's Tommy?
Tommy? Well, where's he supposed to be?
At home, but he's not. We figured he'd be here with you.
Huey looked in surprise at Eve, then Walter, then Eve again.
I ain't seen him, or heard from him either.
Huey had not seen his two nephews since the last time he went to Upton County. That had been 4 years ago, pretty near. It was hard to keep track of time, busy as he'd been. Anxiety pinched Walter's eyes.
He left home. Took a little dun horse Alvin Laudermilk gave him and rode off without saying anything. We thought it was likely he came up this way looking for you.
Well, if he did, he hasn't found me. I understood why Cotton wanted to leave home when he came of age. He had his sights set on other things besides the hoe and the plow, but Tommy was a farm boy at heart. I thought he'd be content to stay there all of his life.
Walter shoved his hands into his pockets and stared at the ground.
We thought so, too. But lately he's taken an itch to see other places, do other things. Eve says he's a lot like you.
Huey gave his sister-in-law a sideward glance, knowing she would not have meant it to be complimentary.
I don't reckon you intentionally enticed him, but Tommy's always looked up to you. I just hoped he wouldn't pick up your Roman ways.
Well, you've made it plain many a time that you'd be a sight happier if I gave up riding and taking to the plow.
We'd all be glad if you did, but we decided a long time ago to quit trying to change you. You'll be Huey Calloway as long as you live.
I've tried being somebody else and it never worked.
He took Walter's place one summer when Walter's leg was broken. For a while he forced himself to become a farmer and bring in Walter's crops, but he hated every day of it. Huey saw disappointment in Eve's blue eyes before she turned and touched a handkerchief to them. He wished Tommy had shown up here so Walter and Eve could take him home and stop worrying. Now Huey had something to worry about, too.
How about the farm? Y'all making it all right?
We stay ahead of old C.C. Tarpley and his bank, if that's what you mean. Fact is, C.C. softened up considerable. His health has been failing.
He may be starting to worry about whether they'll let him into heaven or not.
I'd say he's got a right smart to worry about.
Huey looked toward the steers. The herd had moved past him while he was talking to Walter and Eve.
Chuck wagon's camped on the far side of the shipping pens. We'll be having dinner after we've penned the cattle.
Can't stay. One of Blue Hannigan's truck drivers had a load of freight to deliver to Alpine, and we caught a ride with him. He's got to be back in Upton City tonight.
That's Blue Hannigan's truck? He's always done his freighting with mules and wagons.
He's bought 2 trucks since you saw him last. Says a man's got to keep up with the times or they'll roll over him and leave him laying in the road.
Well, they've rolled over me all right. Just about flattened me out. But I can't figure Blue Hannigan driving a truck. I always figured he was half mule.
He had never had a better friend in the world than Blue Hannigan, unless it was Snort Yarnell and the late Grady Welsh. They were kindred spirits. Cowboys to the core, even though Blue eventually married and turned to freighting to make a better living. Grady died beneath the hooves of a 2-bit bronc.
If Tommy shows up, I'll send him home.
The lines deepened in Walter's face as he put his arm around his wife's shoulder. He seemed to read something in her sad eyes that Huey couldn't see.
No, let him stay if he's set on it. Maybe he'll work it out of his system. But let us know and watch out for him, won't you? Don't let him get himself hurt or in any trouble.
I'll do what I can.
Huey had turned down old man Jenkins' offer of a good-paying job because it would give him responsibility he didn't want. Now, like it or not, he would be considered responsible for his nephew. Walter gripped his hand.
Obliged, Huey. Come see us when you can.
Eve gave Huey a silent hug. The tears in her eyes told him why she didn't trust herself to try to speak. She turned away, letting Walter give her a boost up into the truck.
Walter, just a minute. How's Spring Renfro?
She's still teaching school over at the Laudermilks.
Has she gotten herself married yet?
She's been waiting for the right man to come along, I guess. We all thought you were him once.
Well, so did I, once. Tell Cotton hello for me next time he's home.
And if we see Spring Renfro?
Huey could only shake his head. He didn't know what to tell her. The locomotive backed the empty cattle cars along the spur track to the shipping pens as Huey and the rest of the crew brought up the J-Bar steer herd. Old man Jenkins' touring car sat parked to one side, out of the path of the cattle. The driver leaned against the automobile, goggles pulled up over the broad-billed cap he wore. Jenkins stood opening the gate to the largest pen. He could have delegated that job to his driver, but Huey guessed the old man wanted to see it done right, as if there were any wrong way to open the gate.
Come on, Biscuit.
Huey rode up a little ahead of the herd and stationed himself just past the opening so the steers wouldn't pass it by.
Yeah! Come on! Come on, get in there, you old coot! Come on now! Yeah! Yeah!
He hazed
on.
The leaders in, yeah. Then backed away, yeah. So those that followed wouldn't shy aside. Most of these cattle didn't often see men on horseback, and those few occasions were usually associated with unpleasantness of one kind or another. The pens were dry and dusty. The hooves of earlier herds had already stirred the bare ground after a long winter of relative inactivity. Skip Harkness rode up on the bronc that had come near to throwing him off when the truck's horn sounded.
Got you asleep, didn't he? You gotta learn to stay awake every minute when you're sitting on a bronc.
He never even come close.
Why do I feel duty-bound to nursemaid every green farm kid who wanders onto the J-Bar? This should be the foreman's responsibility, not mine.
Even so, most of them seemed to gravitate toward Huey. The gringo kids, anyway. The young Mexicans drew toward Aparicio Rodriguez, who at 30, give or take a little, was sort of a big brother figure to them. Watching Skip, wishing the boy were a little smarter and a lot less sure of his invincibility, Huey thought of his nephew, Tommy.
Where the hell has that kid got off to? It could be any place from here to El Paso.
A trainman signaled the engineer to back the wooden cattle car slowly until the one nearest the coal car was evenly aligned with the slanted loading chute. The foreman, Bige Saunders, rode to where old man Jenkins waited on an elevated walkway beside the chute. There they could look down upon the steers and count them as they ascended into the cars. Huh? Huey tied Biscuit to an outside fence and beckoned with a jerk of his head for Skip to follow him. The boy dismounted carefully. The hissing of the steam locomotive made his bronc step sideways, its ears nervously pointed forward and its eyes rolling. Climbing over fences to reach the loading chute, Huey and Skip pried the car door open and slid a platform forward, a bridge between the end of the chute and the sand-covered floor of the car. Huey jumped on it to be sure it was set solidly. He motioned for Skip to help him swing the side gates forward and complete a closed corridor that would prevent cattle from jumping to freedom between the chute and the car.
Load them up, boys!
Huey picked up a long pole propped against the fence and took a place on the elevated walkway where he could lean over and prod any animals reluctant to pass through the door into the darkness of the car. Jenkins and Saunders both counted the cattle as they ascended.
That's it for this car!
Jenkins took care to fill the car without overcrowding it.
Come on now! Get in there!
Huey turned back the extra animals and put his shoulder against the car door, sliding it into place, closing the latch. The trainmen had not helped with the loading. Huey couldn't blame them for standing back, for the railroad didn't count that among their duties. But he wished he could see Jenkins' car driver lending a hand. For a man paid $50 a month, he didn't seem to be doing much. Following signals made by one of the trainmen, the engineer moved the train forward to spot the next empty car into place, aligning the door with the chute. Sitting on the fence, rolling a cigarette, Huey noticed a string of horses pushed by four cowboys approaching the loading pens. Huey recognized one of the riders and walked down to open the gate to a pen that had been emptied of cattle.
Howdy, Huey!
A lean and lanky puncher waved jovially as the horses rushed past him into the corral. The sun caught a glint of gold where a front tooth should have been.
Ha ha ha! Snort Yarnell! Somebody told me you was dead! Guess you just smelled like it.
Snort reined up and looked at the Jenkins outfit's horses, tied along the outside fence. His gold tooth gleamed in a broad grin.
When did you J-Bar Puncher start riding burros?
About the same time you slash our waddies commenced riding camels.
Huey shut the gate as the last of the loose horses passed through.
Or are those goats you just brought in?
Snort dismounted and Huey slapped Snort on the shoulder, raising a puff of dust from the cowboy's blue work shirt.
I didn't think you could get any uglier, but damned if you ain't managed.
Ain't much a man can't do if he makes up his mind to it.
Snort was accompanied by three eager young cowhands, none of whom looked to be out of their teens. His loud talk and boisterous manner attracted a youthful following wherever he went. Most of the kids would eventually outgrow him and pull away as maturity overtook their playful spirits, and they realized Snort would remain an adolescent forever, except in years. Snort knew how to have a good time, though. Huey could hardly remember when he hadn't known Snort and welcomed his company for a little while at a time.
I'm surprised you're still working for old man Jenkins. He's tighter than the bark on a tree.
Old Bias cooks good, and that's the main thing. If I had more money, I'd just spend it. What you doing with the horses?
Fixing to load them on that train and shipping to Fort Worth for the horse and mule auction.
A scrabby-looking bunch. Looks to me like they got burro blood in them.
You think so? I wish you'd look at that black yonder. The one with the white stocking foot. Throwed every cowboy in the slash our payroll, even me, and I'm the best bronc rider this country ever seen.
Huey was not impressed. The black horse stood hip-shot, its head down as if asleep.
He's got feet the size of a number two wash tub. The Slash R must have a bunch of sheep herders working out there.
Huey should have been warned by the calculating gleam that came into Snort's eyes. Snort licked a tongue across his gold tooth.
I guess you think some J-Bar hand can ride him.
I'll bet any hand on the place can ride him except maybe old Bias. He could too if he wasn't crippled up.
You got some money to go where your mouth is at?
I will have when we get the cattle loaded. Mr. Jenkins is due to pay us.
I'll take credit. Bet you $30, but I'll pick the J-Bar hand to do the riding.
By this time, the two men were surrounded by cowboys, including the three who came with Snort and most of the J-Bar hands.
Let me ride him, Huey. I'll turn his hide inside out.
Huey shook his head. Skip was not half as good as he thought he was.
Well, that'll be up to Snort. It's his choice who makes a ride.
Snort's youthful companions offered side bets. Some of the J-Bar cowboys took them up, betting $5, $10, $15 apiece. Old man Jenkins and Bige Saunders noticed the commotion and came down to see what was causing it. Jenkins frowned at the hand's eagerness to bet.
I never did approve of gambling unless it's on cattle.
He took a long look at the black horse in question.
But it don't appear to me like there's any gambling to this. If these Slash R boys want to contribute to y'all's fortunes, I don't see any harm in it.
All right, Snort, pick your man.
Snort let his gaze drift over the J-Bar hands, quickly dismissing Aparicio Rodriguez because the good-natured vaquero had a reputation all over the Davis Mountains country as being a bronc rider of exceptional ability. He lingered a little longer on Skip than the others, and Huey feared he was about to choose the kid. Snort took his time, coming back finally to Huey. Huey smiled, knowing he was by all odds the best rider in the outfit. By his own estimation, better even than Aparicio. He could ride that black and darn his socks at the same time. But Snort turned and walked to the fence. He pointed at Jenkins' driver, who stood on the outside looking in, his goggles turned up over the top of his cap.
I pick him.
What? But he's not a hand. He just jockeys that automobile.
He works for Jenkins, don't he? He's on the J-Bar payroll, ain't he?
Huey looked to Jenkins for support, but the old rancher offered him no help.
Well, that don't count. He ain't paid to ride.
You're the one agreed to the deal. Either he rides or you forfeit the bet.
The gold tooth gleamed. Huey thought Snort looked like a fox eating watermelon. Huey, for his part, felt like a coyote with both forefeet in a trap, being rinky-dude by a sly old sport like Snort Yarnell. It wasn't that he would mind seeing the driver get thrown halfway to the moon, but Jenkins might fire the whole outfit if he was left without the services of his chauffeur. The old man probably couldn't even crank the motor, much less handle the wheel.
Looks to me like we got no choice but to forfeit.
The driver took off his duster and laid it across the fence.
You ain't lost yet.
You would ride that brolic?
Why not?
You couldn't ride a kid's stick horse. You'd be about as much use as teats on a boar hog.
What have you got to lose?
Well, Mr. Jenkins stands to lose a driver.
Then maybe you'd have to learn to operate an automobile yourself.
He climbed into the corral and began unlacing his high-top boots.
Your feet look to be about the same size as mine. Lend me your boots and spurs.
What for? You won't make it past the first jump.
But Huey could see that the man was serious. Huey sat in the sand and removed his boots, leaving the spurs on them. He pulled off his socks to keep from getting them full of dirt. Not for $100 would he put on those lace-up boots. He'd look almost as ridiculous as the driver did with that combination of jodhpur breeches and cowboy boots. The chauffeur had to pull hard to get his feet into Huey's boots, and his pained expression indicated that they pinched his toes.
All right, who's gonna catch that horse?
Huey looked at Jenkins, hoping the old man had put a stop to this.
Fools and their money.
The rancher stomped off. Bige Saunders turned to the group.
You all get Mr. Jenkins' driver killed, the old man won't be fit to live.
He trailed after Jenkins.
He doesn't want to watch the massacre. Hell, I'd rather be somewhere else myself.
Snort's companion seemed only too happy to catch up the black horse. The animal appeared unperturbed. It stood calmly while they slid the hackamore over its head and girt the saddle down tightly. Snort turned to the driver.
Ready anytime you are, Marmaduke.
The name's not Marmaduke. Friends call me Peeler.
Peeler?
Like in Bronc Peeler.
The driver handed his cap and goggles to Skip Harkness.
Try not to let these get dirty.
One of Snort's friends held the black's ears, though the horse looked as if it might be asleep. Peeler gripped the hackamore rein, a handful of mane and the saddle horn as he swung up into the saddle. It occurred to Huey that Peeler was doing this properly. He'd probably watch somebody sometime. The cowboy released the ears and stepped back out of the way. For a moment, the horse seemed not to notice. Then it made a violent leap forward and came down solidly on all 4 feet. Huey imagined he could feel the ground tremble under the impact. It should have been enough to bust the rider's teeth, but Peeler was still in the saddle as the horse made its second jump. Huey stared in amazement. The rider seemed to anticipate the Bronc's moves and meet them halfway. Very little daylight appeared between him and the saddle, never for long. Pitching, twisting, spinning half around, the horse failed to shake him. Its long jumps dwindled into crow hops as it tired, and finally it ran in slowing circles around the corral. Peeler drew on the hackamore rein and brought the Bronc to a stop, stepping off onto the ground. He handed the rein to Snort Yarnell.
Thought you said this pony could buck.
Snort made a resigned smile.
Thought they said you was just an auto jockey.
I am, but I wasn't always.
Peeler sat in the sand and began struggling with Huey's boots.
Huey, looks like you all ran a ringer in on us.
Like you done with that sleepy-looking black? Anyway, you chose him. I tried to get you to pick somebody else.
That's when I ought to have known you had something up your sleeve. You're a licensed and certified liar, Huey Calloway. The only one I know that can hold a candle to me. So we'll pay up like men and try to get you the next time.
Old man Jenkins waved his hat over his head, meaning they had all better get back to work if they wanted to have a job tomorrow. Huey put on his socks, then his boots. He shook hands with Peeler.
I've never been mistaken but 2 or 3 times in my life. Reckon this was one of them. You're entitled to share my winnings.
Oh, forget it. This helped remind me why I learned to drive an automobile. Ooh.
Huey sat at a table in a corner of the saloon, staring down at a blank sheet of paper. The J-Bar Cowboys and the Slash R Hands were spread out along the bar, Anglo and Mexican all mixed together. Racial lines were easily blurred by a little whiskey.
Come on, Huey! You're falling behind!
I'll catch up. Gotta write this letter first.
He was momentarily distracted by an elderly swamper dragging a stiff leg as he swept up glass from a bottle that had rolled off a table and broken on the floor. He was another old cowboy, too broken up to ride anymore, and reduced to a demeaning job to earn his grub and sleep in the dry.
Hell of a way for a good man to end up.
He touched the sharp end of the stub pencil to his tongue and began a slow and halting effort.
Alpine, Texas, May 21st, 1910. Dear Walter and Eve, I take pencil in hand to tell you I have not seen Tommy. I have just come into a little extra money and am sending it to you to put against your debt on the farm, like I have done before. Don't worry, I don't need it. If Tommy shows up, I will let you know. Yours very truly, Huey Calloway. P.S. If you see Miss Spring Renfro...
He couldn't think how to end the last sentence and tried to erase it, but it wouldn't all come off the paper. He addressed an envelope to Walter and Eve Calloway, Upton City, Texas, and tucked the letter into it with $50 in paper money. He licked the envelope, sealed it, then walked over to the bar and handed it to the bald-headed bartender along with a quarter.
I don't have a penny stamp, but I'd be obliged if you'd put one on this and see that it gets to the post office. Keep the change.
Oh, you're a generous man, Huey Calloway. It'll be the starving of you someday. Are you ready for another drink?
Ready and raring.